Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm the host of Funny Stuff, a program of comedy which airs each week here on KCRW. Hard to say whether this is an afternoon edition of Funny Stuff or a funny edition of Newsstand, but regardless, it's an opportunity to spend half an hour with America's preeminent political humorist of the last 33 years, Mort Saul. Mort will be performing beginning Wednesday, the 25th through the 29th at the Henry Fonda Theater. Welcome to KCRW, Mort.
Thank you, Bob.
You've been at this for quite a while now, 33 years.
Yeah, I got the franchise, I guess.
What impresses me most about you is, despite your reputation for being cynical, your ability to still be outraged by the escapades of those in power, which I think, you know, a really cynical person would just expect it. But you seem to continually be outraged. Are you still surprised by anything you read in the papers?
Well, I'm appalled, but I'm never surprised. It's, it's interesting about cynics. They never win, you know. They never win. Cynics can even get nominations, but they never win because they can't inspire people. I hate to start on such a solemn note, but I think it's true.
Are you optimistic for?
Yeah. I don't know if it justified my optimism. I'm always optimistic. America's really remarkable. But and besides, what are the alternatives, as they say?
Let's talk a little bit about the overall perspective as you've seen it over the last 30-some years. First of all, how have the audiences changed? You do a lot of colleges.
Yeah. The audience changed in this respect. It got much broader. I started in 1953 at the fabled Hungry Eye in San Francisco, and Eisenhower was the president. Joe McCarthy was really the president, and the 50s were full of conformists, and except for Jack Kerouac and Ferlinghetti and those guys in San Francisco. And everybody was squeaky clean in college and looking for security, and sounds familiar. So the liberals were a cult who didn't like the Republicans who were in office. But once Watergate happened to people in Vietnam, et cetera, since it happened to everybody, it's not us versus them anymore. Now with the audience, I can say to the audience, we're all inmates, mm-hmm. and we have a kind of a unity. The audience has a lot more information, thanks to you and your cohorts in television. The audience has a lot more information. They know more now when they sit down than they used to know when they left.
How have you changed over the years?
Well,
do you ever go back and hear something you said 25 years ago
and wish you
could buy it back?
And not especially. We were right. We were right generally. The thing is that I use the kind of approach of Candide now. You know, it's the worst thing that ever happened, but it might be good because as a perennial student. So I use that approach, and the audience likes it better. I'm in eternal wonder at how great everything is. Regardless of how see, my role has changed because the audience used to say, bring chaos, make mincemeat out of the Republican order. And now there's such universal mincemeat, in effect, that they're saying, bring order out of the chaos, because mm-hmm. chaos is universal. So that's changed in that respect. And it's changed in it changes because of the immediacy of television. Is when I started, I was the only one doing it. There are probably more comedians now. My God, that's changed. They all have a forum, you know?
Yeah, but in terms of just the political satire,
there's
you and Mark Russell, and that's who else?
I would say the kids are, and this isn't meant as a pejorative, they're, as just descriptively, the kids are reasonably apolitical now. Of course, that's because nobody's really starving. Martin Sheehan, please copy. A lot of people are starving, but I mean, the point is that they're not, a lot of the kids aren't growing up hungry. That makes it a problem for them because when you talk to an audience, it's harder when you're young because you haven't been in the army or married a woman or sired a child or fallen off a bar stool. Mm-hmm. You're trying to tell them what life is about and you're 22. That makes it harder.
But the students that you've talked to have always been 22.
Well, I was thinking about the performers. The students are something else. I mean, once they start sending them to Libya or to Nicaragua, they'll all be radicals again. I mean, I'm always suspicious of people that are altruistic radicals. It's got to be a guy whom the government is stepping on the Adam's apple of. then you got a real radical.
Do crises such as the current scandal, do they bring out your audiences or do they keep them away? Do you find that more people are coming to see you when there's a hot thing?
They expect
going on?
You to talk about it. I don't like groups. I never did, Bob. I don't like the group. I'm kind of, I like the individual versus the group. I think that's the real war, by the way. And that's the big war. And, by the time everybody's after Reagan, I've moved on. Mm-hmm. It's too easy now. It's like, being in a lynch mob with a rope in your hand. Just like I got tired of doing Nixon, but I did him for 20 years, 25.
So you don't miss Nixon?
Well, as a matter of fact, he's starting to look very good, which will give you an idea what's going on now. But I think that I don't like groupthink. It disturbs me to be part of large groups. And it's too easy now. You got to get some focus on the Iranian thing. There's a lot of things. In other words, if you and I were doing a TV show, we'll say here, and we were going to sit and write a sketch for the show tonight, at the meeting, I would introduce to you things that people have overlooked. For instance, Bob Woodward went to the hospital Bill Casey was when he had the brain tumor to find out if he really had a brain tumor or he was just testimony shy.
Mm-hmm.
And they caught him on the sixth floor and tried to throw him off the sixth floor at the hospital. The hospital personnel, he was dressed as an orderly or something, according to the Washington Post. So those are the stories that are overlooked, or Mike Deaver, but I would look for the human parts of it.
No one has suggested that perhaps the surgeon that was operating on Casey was encouraged to slip a little bit and lop off the speech functions.
Well, the ones who...
That's my particular paranoia there.
No, I'll tell you, the ones who suggested that go all the way back to the spate of assassinations we had in the 60s. And you know what the DA in New Orleans used to say, Jim Garrison, he'd say, I'm not paranoid, but on the other hand, if I was an insurance salesman who wrote policies for all the people who were going to testify before the Warren Commission, I'd have a hard time explaining that to my first-line supervisor, you know, the incidents of fatalities. So there you go.
What do you do when nothing terribly noteworthy is happening, or has there been such a time?
Jeez, I haven't seen it. Something will always happen. What you do is you do what Schulz does in Peanuts. On his quiet days, it isn't that the world is quiet, it's that maybe creatively you're quiet, he plays the characters. He plays Snoopy. Plays Snoopy's sense of adventure, Snoopy's adventurous nature. He plays that. He plays Charlie Brown's insecurity. You play the characters. In other words... I talk to the people about movies I've worked in, where I've been writing. I talk to them about the stars. Or you play Reagan, the basic character, because you've got him for 8 years, even if there's no crisis. Or you play women, which is universal. The war between men and women is universal.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's a big revolution, like women seeking their identity, you play that. You play men being bewildered. You play, you know.
Who's been your favorite target over the years?
They're all pretty easy. It's more fun with some guys. Reagan has a very good sense of humor. Gene McCarthy had a great sense of humor, as did Kennedy and Stevenson. That's always helped, you know. But you can also find humor in things that aren't political for the audience. The audience is very movie hungry these days, and you can go into the movies. In other words, if you want to say, use the movies, I'll give you an example. What happened to American masculine resolve? You have two guys talking, and one guy says, "Did you see the news?" "No, what happened?" He said, "The Arabs just took another plane with 41 Americans on it, holding them hostage." And his friend is infuriated, and he says, "Those damn Arabs, let's go see Rambo again." You know, you go that way. And you put it – when I worked in Australia this summer, I went into the context of movies instead of – they were worried about our foreign policy. So I put it in context of Sylvester Stallone and Rambo. Things that people can pick up. Politics themselves won't always hold up. Mm-hmm. You have to put it in the context of Ted Koppel or Sylvester Stallone.
Right. Has it been difficult to satirize presidents or public figures when they're riding a quest of popularity? I'm thinking mainly of Kennedy and Reagan.
Yeah. It was tough with Kennedy. You know, I knew him, and I knew him very well. And when I went after him, the people were on honeymoon, and they resented it. Not the people, the liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he died, the liberals embraced Johnson like a log in the sea after the boat went down, and they were furious. And Johnson, I thought, was tremendously vulnerable as a target. But I'm going to try to give some examples here, because nothing more deadly than being clinical about comedy, I feel. But if I say to the audience now, I would say it to them this way. I'd say, Truman proved anyone could become president. Eisenhower proved you don't need a president. Johnson wounded the presidency, Nixon killed it, Carter buried it, and poor Reagan is trying to prove his life after death. So I'd go that way. You can become, of course, you can become very intellectual. You know, somebody says, "What are you doing Monday?" Mort said, "Well, I'm working in a banquet with Alexander Haig." I said, "What are you doing there?" I said, "Well, sometimes you have to vote for your opposite." A good example, because presidents say there are things they say they'll do and they won't do. There are things they say they'll do and they can't do. And there are things they say they'll never do. That's the guy you want to vote for. For instance, Nixon said, the last thing I'll ever do is recognize the red Chinese, and it was. See, I mean, you can go all kinds of ways with
That's wonderful.
You turn it around. You know.
Has there been anybody that was just totally off limits, either due to your sensibilities or those of the audiences?
Well, I'm glad you qualified it. That's very good, your sensibilities. I think, of course, with freedom comes responsibility. Not to be childlike and just say, well, I'm on cable tonight so I can curse. In effect, yeah, you can do anything, but obviously I wouldn't be doing anything about Marilyn Monroe's death. Uh-huh. I mean, you could. Nowadays, you can do anything. But I don't know if you should. It's good to have the freedom. But it would be nice if the artists had some sensibility and didn't, you know, just go all over the wall.
What about from the audience's point of view? Was there somebody that you really wanted to go after, but you knew the audiences just wouldn't buy?
Well, they like Reagan, and they don't see him as evil. You could portray him as bumbling, but you couldn't portray him as evil. For instance, if I were to do the joke tonight, I think it would be in the area of him picking up the paper. And instead of being crushed by what they're saying about him, his wife says to him, the joke seems to be, I think, in this area, they think you knew everything that was going on. You were totally in control. He says, they do. See, I mean, he would be invigorated. I think that's where the joke would be. But we're talking characterization. We're talking character now. And that's what I always ask when I work in concert with other comedians. We do a television show or something. I always ask the writers, well, you know, is that really true? Not just politically. Like there was a movie some time ago called Movers and Shakers, Walter Matthau mm-hmm. and Charles Grodin. And in the movie, he was satirizing how ineffectual movie executives are. And one of them is that they're not creative. Well, that's pretty old. And part of it, the writer says in the picture, I think Charles Grodin wrote it, mm-hmm. is that they've got a mechanical shark at the studio and it won't work. But the fact of the matter is, I know it's just a comedy, but the fact of the matter is, that's what Hollywood does best, is make, complicated monsters that do work. Mm-hmm. The part they're not so great at is the stories. So if we're going to fault them for anything, that's really not accurate. It's not true. That's not really what's wrong with them.
Is Nixon still funny?
Oh, yeah. You can find a way. You can always find a way. But you have to give it an immediacy. You have to have an event in which he's back in the light again, and then twist it. There's always a way. There's always a way. A way in. You can do anything. I'll give you an example. Carol and I on the way in were talking about the New York Times, because whenever I listen to Newsstand, they're reading the New York Times. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep waiting for the Christian Science Monitor. They always billboard it, but I rarely hear it. So the New York Times. Well, the liberals love the New York Times. It's the Bible. So the way you do
it. Mainly because it has no comics. I'm convinced of that.
There's the end of the mystery.
Right.
All these years. So the New York Times, what would be funny? Gorbachev and Reagan go to the summit, and it doesn't go well. My God. And they go to war. The world ends. This is the world ending reported by the New York Times. Says, nuclear confrontation, world ends. And column heading says, women and minorities hurt hardest. See, and then you've taken them and you've taken the liberals and you're on your way. It's hard to get the liberals to laugh at themselves because they're not quite sure what they are. A lot of this former left-wing people. And I'm convinced, you know, what's wrong in America is that there's no left.
You keep saying liberals, and I'm trying to think, you know, are there any left?
Well, there aren't. They are what I would call, I didn't want to be, you know, get everybody to tune out by being clinical, but I think that what they are is social democrats in the classic European
sense. As opposed
to
secular humanists, right?
What did the guy say? Thank God for secular humanism. So you're gonna, you know, you get the religious thing. See, if you're going to do Falwell, a million things occur to me that you could do. For instance, Mike Wallace interviewed me once, and he said, he said to me, you think you're some kind of messiah up there on the stage, and that could be harmful in your career. So I said, harmful? I said, history teaches us that being a messiah can be fatal. And he says, oh, you're referring to Jim Jones. How's that? Or I'll give you a better one than that. Is a guy's interviewing Reagan, and he said he's going to run for president. And the reporter said to him, well, Governor, can you face the fact you don't have many followers? And Reagan said, well, you know, he said, Jesus only had 12 and one of them turned out to be unreliable. So, you know, you can go all kinds of ways. And the way I would do it on a stage is I would, with mock gravity, I would say that I'm on the side of Falwell. That would get everybody to listen. because that's not predictable with me.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd say, well, what is he talking about? And then I would go in and say that, you know, there's not enough of God in the classroom, and we'd be off and running.
Well, speaking of you being on stage, we should remind people that we're speaking with Mort Saul here, who will be at the Henry Fonda Theater from the 25th to the 29th. At the end of the show, we'll give a number that you can call for ticket information.
Great.
What has hindsight done for Jimmy Carter?
Jimmy Carter. Well, it's interesting. You know, after all this with the Contras and all, you would think that people would look back and say, what a swell guy. We didn't do him justice, but they don't. Just as when Watergate broke, they didn't look back for George McGovern.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, speaking of George McGovern, it reminds me of a great joke. I was working at the Playboy Hotel in Miami during the McGovern convention. And when the convention was over, McGovern and Gene McCarthy and Humphrey came to see me. And we closed the club and started drinking. And McGovern says to me, says, Mort, I'm going to lose, but I'm going to prove something. I'm going to prove you don't have to be a damn lawyer to run for office. I'm sick of lawyers. So McCarthy said, wait a minute. He says, I wasn't a lawyer. He said, I was a professor. So Humphrey said, I got both you guys beat. You're both intellectuals. I was a druggist. And McCarthy said, you were? And he said, yeah. McCarthy said, if you'd said that earlier and louder, every young person in America would have voted for you. And that's a drug joke 15 years ago. But it's an intellectual drug joke. It's focused. That's focused humor. Focused critical humor. But, you know,
is that true or is that yours?
No, that's a true story.
That's wonderful.
That's McCarthy. McCarthy's wonderful. I mean, great sense of humor. The brightest man, by the way, I ever met in political life. Bar none. Truly. Now,
who is the most honorable?
The most honorable? Adlai Stevenson. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. And most human, by the way. A really wonderfully warm person. And
was it from you that I heard the story of his television advisor? He had a TV advisor that was assigned to him because he didn't want to deal with television.
Oh, no. What's tell me.
And the guy went along with him on the road and was wondering why Stevenson never called him in to ask him any questions. And he was just along on the tour. And then finally, after about 4 weeks on the tour,
yeah,
Stevenson calls him in and says, you're my television advisor, aren't you? And the guy says, yeah. He says, can you do something with this? I can't get a picture.
Well, you know, when I worked in Chicago, I used to go to his farm in Libertyville. And he asked all the artists who satirized him viciously, because they were all Republican papers when he ran, mm-hmm, pretty much. He asked for the original cartoons, and he lined the wall with them. He used to sit down there with a fountain pen and a legal pad and write his own speeches. And he was very fast. And I'll give you an idea. You know, before ABC and instant sports and everything, got to remember, this is 52. I was doing a rally with him for Jack Kennedy. Well, actually, this would be 59. And he looked at the headlines. I had a paper in my hand in the wings of the Marasco Theater in New York. And he looked at the headline. And you remember if you recall, Bob, that the Eisenhower Secretary of Defense was Charlie Wilson, mm-hmm, who had come from GM, wouldn't sell a stock. And the Democrats were insisting he either be fired out of the cabinet or sell a stock. And Eisenhower said, no. He says, I need him on my team. Called the cabinet the team. So he looked at this headline. He wouldn't sell a stock.
At least he didn't call it a foursome, you know.
Yeah. And yeah, right. The overlapping grip. And he looked at that headline, Stevenson. He walked to the mic and he said, I see the star defense man on the team may be penalized for holding. Not bad. That was pre-Howard Cosell.
That's awesome.
That's interesting what you said. Not a foursome is very good. You know, one of the earliest jokes I had about Eisenhower was when they couldn't integrate the schools then or with Governor Faubus. And Humphrey suggested that Eisenhower set the example by taking a black kid by the hand and walking her into the school. And the joke at that time was, should he use an overlapping grip? It's a great old golf joke. Golf, by the way, remained an aristocrat's game. You don't see any black golf players.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
They didn't ever break that down.
Do you think that it's possible, just Stevenson brings this to mind, in this day of media campaigns, for a truly qualified man to be elected president?
Yeah, I always did. I'm not cynical about the electorate.
Just by fluke, by accident?
I think if you tell them the truth, you can win. That's me. That doesn't mm-hmm mean that, you know, that's God's word. That's what I believe in my heart. That's just one human heart along the way out of 240 million, I guess, in the country. I believe that. I believe that if you do your best, it's like water on a stone, but it eventually gets there. Freud said the voice of truth is soft but persistent. I really believe it. I think that, in fact, as I said earlier, the other side of that is that cynical men can't inspire. Even the good parts of Reagan, even the people who are critical of Reagan listening, and many of you are, he did inspire people, and that's how he got elected. He did inspire them. They felt good about themselves somewhere. I think McCarthy came a long way, and I think that very dark forces in America would not have to go to work if we were really corrupt. We're not corrupt. We do elect good guys, unless they have accidents like this thing with the Kinos.
You don't think we elect good ad agencies?
Yeah, they're always there, but they can be swayed too. If you think of compounding a good man with a good ad agency, then you'd really have to.
So, what do you see for the upcoming elections?
Well, I think
crystal ball.
I don't think Bush and Hart are shoo-ins by any means.
Right.
And I think that if the Democratic Party doesn't have anything better, any to look forward to except Ronald Reagan slipping on a banana peel, they're going to lose again. It's going to shock them all. And
was Cuomo serious?
And about pulling out?
Yeah.
Yes, he had a previous engagement with St. Augustine, a morning conversation on the mountain. Yeah, he's gone. And, but you got a lot of people out there that can't be discounted. Robert Dole claims that the way he got rid of Howard Baker was by calling Mrs. Reagan and she offered Baker the job. He claims that's how he did it. I think Haig is going to be a serious contender in the Republican Party. And I think that the Democrats, you know, it's very interesting. When the last election was over, I worked at the Improvisation here in L.A. And we put two television sets on the stage and I commented on the returns.
Mm.
We filled the club.
I'll bet.
I believe that when people that they respected were running, like Kennedy and Nixon or Eisenhower and Stevenson, I don't believe a comedian could fill a nightclub on a night like that. It'd be too crucial. It shows how it's deteriorated, the form. And it's a comment on them more than me and more than my prowess. And
but you don't see that deterioration continuing.
Well, maybe. Who knows? But what I'm saying is that at the end of the night, both Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw said, well, the Democratic Party's lost. It's got to change its act. It's obvious people don't want it. I believe it lost because it did change its act. I believe you got to be true to yourself. That's the only way you'll win. And that's not just politics. That's a commitment to a woman in a marriage. That's kissing your kid with the end of a broom as well as your lips, depending on whether you're going to make them a serious student or writing a screenplay, doing the best you know how to do. I think that's functional, not idealistic.
Now, are you, as a spectator of the game of politics, ever torn between what's best for the country and what's best for your act?
Gee whiz! I mean, you really flatter me. I don't think that I have that kind of
a spectator when you're rooting on the sidelines. I mean, would you really love to see somebody truly horrible come in so that you'd have plenty of material?
No, I get caught up like everybody else in the fever. I get caught up in the fever. Once they're in, they change in my eyes. Like a guy I love, as soon as his hand drops on the Bible, I start attacking him, and I can't wait. That happened with Kennedy. It happened with McCarthy. And McCarthy, by the way, you know, announced that he would make me the press secretary if he were elected. And he said my job would be to go out in the morning at the White House and pick up the Washington Post when they throw it in the lawn and pick it up and throw it back at them. He also said something that you'll appreciate here, and the guys in the booth will too. He said that he was going to give me, when he was president, he'd give me a one-hour show on all three networks every Saturday night to tell the media what they did wrong the previous 7 days. And a reporter at this press conference said to him, how do you get them on all three networks? He said, presidential edict. And they said, isn't that coercion? And he said, what do you think the presidency is for? See, he could never resist the joke, even if it meant losing the people. He could never resist the joke. The remarkable guy.
Do you have more fun when the Democrats or the Republicans are in office?
Well, I used to have more fun with the Republicans when I started, but that was a coincidence of chronology. I have a lot of fun with the liberals now. I don't know if they want to laugh, but you got to give it to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, I don't think they're that far apart, and that's why I think it is easier to give it to everybody. If they were far apart, you couldn't do it, but they're two branches of the same army now, and I think the audience senses that.
So just to wrap things up, what's real hot right now? What do the audiences really want to hear you do? What are you doing these days?
Well, talk about women. You know that how women want to have an executive position with independent income and no emotional attachments. They see a guy at the office, they want to have a transient physical relationship. They take him to dinner and deduct it as a corporate business expense and go to bed with him and not call him the next day. which is a definition of the new woman. Somebody says, gee, the new women are a lot like the old men were, unfortunately. And we're not worth emulating is the point of the joke. Or saying that they're going to rededicate the 50th anniversary of the Golden Gate Bridge, and Reagan is going to push the button, you know, and light it up. And Nancy Reagan has asked Donald Reagan to stand below the bridge in the bay and hold the ground wire. Talk about that when we talk about, you know, just
what about Nancy?
Well, I know her very well from here. They're friends of mine from Pacific Palisades. I know her extremely well. Mm-hmm. And she's interesting. You know,
very lifelike.
Chris Wallace said, I think that the liberals started on her because they're afraid that they came on because too many people like them. That's what I think is psychology. Chris Wallace wrote a book about her, you know.
I didn't know.
He said she wasn't liberated, you know. And he said the point of his book was that she was an anomaly in a day of elevated women's consciousness. But I read the book and I had a different conclusion. I thought the book proved that an ordinary guy with a second-rate intellect can become president if his wife loves him. See, I think her real offense to the liberals is that after 35 years, she still loves her husband. That makes her a traitor to her class. I think he's very lucky. Have a girl who loves him. It's a wonderful thing to have on your side. He won already, no matter what happens. That's the romantic in me.
What else is hot?
Well,
are you leaving the Iran scandal alone for the time being till the dust settles?
The Iran scandal backs up in a conversation I had. You know, I had dinner at the White House, and I was sitting with George Shultz, and I said to him, he said, "Have you been on television? I've been watching." I said, "I'm not the big thing in television. The big thing was America." He said, "What's that?" And I said, "It's a show about the Soviet occupation of America." And he said to me, "I didn't know." I guess he's trying to protect himself, the clinch. What else? I think after Casey's brain tumor and McFarland's suicide attempt, when Reagan announced catastrophic health insurance, the plan was for a staff initially. So, you know, it's like that.
Well, for more of the same, you'll be appearing at the Henry Fonda Theater. I'm sure this comes as news to you. Between the 25th and the 29th, that's Wednesday
there,
through Sunday.
I'll be there.
For ticket information, the number to call is area code 213-410-1062. And thanks for coming down.
Good to see you, Bob.